From the four corners of Southern California, this is The Hot Seat, and you're in it with me, Max Schwartz. It starts right now. On the phone, I have the eighth candidate for this fourth city council district to call into The Hot Seat, Sheila Irani. How are you, Miss Irani? Thank you very much for taking the time to call into The Hot Seat.
Good morning. Thank you very much for calling.
My pleasure. Thank you for coming on. I would like to remind everyone that I'm following my election protocol. Now I have lots of questions and not a lot of time, so without further ado, let's get started. Why did you decide to run for city council?
My background in business and education and urban economics and business administration, owning my own company for the last 20 years and being a taxpayer for as long as I have and a native Angeleno all kind of came together. And I just felt that this city needs somebody like me right now helping to devise better policies and attract more businesses over here and deal with the fact that our infrastructure is failing. And the fact that I'm one of the few that is willing to stand up and say that we're just spending too much on employee compensation and we've got to do something about it. I'm also committed to giving $50,000 from my salary for community projects within CD4 because I'm a former director of special projects, and I know that our communities need a little bit of help right now.
Okay, so would that $50,000 you're talking about from your overall salary go into the discretionary fund for use on those on that sole?
Correct.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. And I want to ask about, you said you're a business. Do you still own your own business?
I do. I have a 20-year transportation planning and marketing firm, Pathway Strategic Communication, in 95. I work with transit agencies across the United States as well as large regional
I don't need an explanation. I just needed to know if you still owned your own business. And did you own your business while working for Mr. Labonge?
I did.
Were you doing both at the same time, or were you on leave from your company?
I was doing both at the same time, but I just had one small client to attend to, a very small transit agency, and my creative director was handling most of the work.
Okay. And you also you call yourself a businesswoman / community leader on the ballot.
Right.
How are you a community leader?
Well, I've been a big sister for 11 years. I chair a children's hospital foundation benefiting high-risk and homeless youth. I founded a group called Women in Words. We provide funds for foster children and battered women. I've served 5 terms as my homeowners president up here in Lake Hollywood Estates. And I'm also the outreach chair at Hollywood United Neighborhood Council. I'm also on the board of the Hillside Federation.
Okay. And going back to your occupation, what is your, you sort of said this, but formally to answer the question, what is your present occupation and why do you believe you are qualified to be a city council member?
Well, I'm an entrepreneur. I have several businesses. So I have a real estate asset management firm. I have my transportation planning firm. And then I own a lot of real estate outright where I'm, you know, renting it. So I'm pretty familiar with tax codes and growing a business from nothing to millions. And I've also been a partner at other firms. I'm a partner in real estate deals. So, you know, that background's pretty unique to me as far as all the other candidates.
But how does that make you qualified to be a member of the city council?
Well, I mean, businesses are how we're growing employment in the city. They're the taxpayers. So are the constituents who live here. So I'm one in both groups. I've also served this council office as the director of special projects. I offered my services as a volunteer to the current councilman, Tom Labonge, because I knew that the Purple Line and the bus rapid transit lane are going in on Wilshire. And I said, let me help you with a little bit of the planning and community outreach, since that's what I do for a living. And I'd come in once a week. And the first day that I came in there, he offered me a full-time position. And I took it, and I said, I'll help you finish up the projects that need some attention before he terms out, such as a lot of the parks need ball fields. So we were working on soccer fields and ball fields, with opening up the LAUSD playgrounds to make them community parks. We work with finalizing Station 82. We worked on working with the police department and community outreach there, a lot of different park projects in Griffith Park. So the LA River Fun Run helped set up the Mid-City West.
And you said you were involved with the station with the Purple Line.
Yeah, Purple Line. Well, it was just starting off. The planning was kicked off. They got the funding through Measure R. And we need to work with the communities on the design of the transit stations. And we had to look at, we knew what the route would be, but what would it look like at the end? And, you know, it would be a great sacrifice for a lot of communities while this construction is going on, such as the Mid-Wilshire Miracle Mile area.
Okay.
So we had to work with them and utilities and et cetera.
And moving on now, because we have to get to other questions, the 4th City Council District is very diverse. Mm-hmm. If elected, how will you get to know each portion of the district and what is important to that specific region?
Well, in order to even run as a candidate, you have to get to know all the districts. There are so many debates and surveys and media exposure that you've got to get to know your constituent and their needs immediately. So working as a director of projects, you know, helped a great deal because everybody's got some community plan or an improvement that they would like to have made in their area. Sherman Oaks wanted their soccer fields, and Pan Pacific Park for the Grove also needed some work. So those are the kinds of things that I'm already familiar with. It's not as diverse as everybody thinks it is. I mean, when you go from community to community, the same problems seem to plague all of us. So it's congestion is number one. It's always the biggest problem. How do we deal with the level of traffic that has made, you know, commuting from point A to point B a nightmare? The other thing is overdevelopment. There's been such a huge surge in activity in areas like Sherman Oaks and Hollywood and Miracle Mile that they're saying, you know, we're not tempering the growth to match the infrastructure, or it's not looking like the neighborhood that it's situated in. What's going on? Why is City Council always kind of rubber stamping all this stuff? So those are the things I hear.
Would you change it so that way there's not as much overdevelopment?
I definitely think that we have got to temper the growth. We're not looking at the problems that the development leaves behind once the building is fixed and the developer is gone taking his profits with him. What he's leaving behind, or they're leaving behind, is, you know, a great deal of congestion, increase in crime. The density sometimes creates other issues with the other buildings surrounding it. We've got to start internalizing those costs. So maybe our permit process has to get a little bit more expensive, or we have to impose certain guidelines that these developers have to adhere to without exception.
Okay.
So that the city doesn't end up having to pay for increased infrastructure so that development has adequate water supply or electrical transmission or police and fire response times. Those are the things that those developers should be paying for. They're the ones who are profiting off of that. So.
All right, and I do have to interject here, just going back one moment to your comment about working for Tom Labonge. Do you feel that you know all of the district or know the different parts of the district from your time working for the councilman?
Absolutely.
Okay, and how have you during the campaign been able to expand on those, and how do you plan on expanding on those relationships if you're elected?
Well, I mean, when we go into the debates, I can speak into greater specifics than I think all the other candidates can. My background in urban economics is one asset that I bring to the table, but also the experience within city council. I have access to the heads of all the city agencies. I worked with them in developing these projects, whether it's Bureau of Engineering or LADOT or Bureau of Street Services, so that I also know the limitations. I mean, I can't promise something that I know the city can't deliver. So, you know, I hear a lot of yeses. Yes, we're going to trim all the trees. Really? How are we going to get the money for that? It's easy to make those kinds of promises because it wins you a vote. But I'm not going to pander that way. That's not going to solve our problems. I've got to lay it out to the voter. These are our problems. We have got a structural deficit. We are paying way too much for our city labor.
Okay.
Causing us to be uncompetitive, and we cannot hire enough people to satisfy the needs of our city. How are we going to solve these problems? Well, this is my map, you know, that I would follow to solve the problem so that you get your streets paved and you get the water lines replaced and enforce our building codes.
Okay, and I do have to interrupt you there because I got one more question on this matter, then we're going to get more into building. And that is, you said that the community, it's not as diverse as people think, but I think that each community has or wants certain things that others may not. So what will you do to satisfy all geographic regions of the district? And for example, how will you vote if Sherman Oaks wants something that Hancock Park or Tooloola Lake doesn't?
Well, each area has always wanted something unique to their area. That's nothing new. And how we satisfy is we create community meetings between the community leadership, their constituents, and the city agencies, and really the city council serves as a liaison. So we make it all happen. We bring the city agencies and their expertise into the mix, and the needs and the demands from the communities come in. So let's just say like Toluca Lake, they would like parking meters on Riverside. So we have to work with LADOT, and we have to work with the business community. How, you know, can we afford to do it? Is it going to make any sense? What's the timing on it, et cetera? So that's something. But that's unique to Toluca Lake. I mean, Sherman Oaks might want to actually drop meters on Sundays or something like that. So you have to go, and your line of defense basically are your field deputies. I plan on having 5 field deputies within this large district so that each area has a point person to go to describe their problems, who's well-versed in what the cities can do, and then we go about solving the problem immediately.
But say if Sherman Oaks wants a citywide traffic mitigation method that Hancock Park doesn't, how are you going to decide which way to vote?
It's always going to be the majority, so we have to work with all the communities. And, you know, obviously there could be a compromise. What Sherman Oaks wants runs counter to maybe what works in Hancock Park, but maybe we have to, you know, we have to add a little here, you know, decrease a little bit there to get something that's a comfortable medium for everybody.
Okay, so it would just be based on the majority of which neighborhoods you want?
I mean, there's more than just one district. There are 15 districts, so you have to negotiate with the other 14 districts as well if you want to do a citywide
policy. But specifically
policy.
Within your district, how would you decide which way to vote? By polling the neighborhoods?
Well, we can do a lot with technologies today. I mean, we're going to have a lot of email addresses specifically from all this campaigning that we've done that are very recent. So we can easily do a MailChimp. We can do a survey of the thing and describe the issues and just get a poll to find out how people feel about the changes. And, you know, our constituents are pretty bright. They understand, you know, unintended consequences, and we can talk to them.
Okay, and we'll be right back with Sheila Irani, candidate for 4th City Council District. And we're back now with Sheila Irani, the 8th candidate for the 4th City Council District, to call into the hot seat. So, Ms. Irani, Mayor Garcetti recently announced his Resilience by Design plan that would in part mandate the retrofitting of some older buildings. The City Council recently passed this motion, and according to Luis Reyes, Gil Cedillo's press secretary, they expect to have the language of the ordinance in February. Mm-hmm. However, there are already questions about funding the improvements. Given that there are a lot of older apartment buildings in the Los Feliz area, what are you going to do to make Mayor Garcetti's plan financially viable or feasible, excuse me, for building owners?
Mm-hmm. Well, the costs, everywhere I've gone, the costs are going to have to be split by a number of sources. And I do think that we need to approach the federal government even to see if we can either get dollars that we can offer as low-interest loans or something like that. And FEMA would be the perfect agency to go to. You know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So if we can get them to give us money to help retrofit our buildings so that in the event of an earthquake, which undoubtedly will happen most likely in our lifetimes, that could collapse so many buildings.
Have you already
to the federal government?
Have you looked into the federal government and FEMA to see whether an option is them or whether their options as sources of capital are even available to the city of Los Angeles?
It changes radically from, you know, administration to administration. It has been done before for other issues, so I know that there's precedent there, but no, I haven't pursued that for this particular thing. This is a fast-moving
What are the other sources of capital that you would consider?
Well, I do think that there's going to be a small increase in rent, I would say that that's only fair. They're going to be living in a safer building. It's worth more as far as a rental is concerned, so they should contribute to the overall cost. Also, the property owner has to contribute to the overall cost because, once again, their property value is going to be increased because it is that much safer.
Yeah, but how can they necessarily afford to do a major retrofit that can cost tens of thousands of dollars?
I mean, if it's an older building, there's equity in there. You can always get, a homeowner's equity loan. There's also, I'm hoping that the city can afford to offer low-interest loans.
Where would that money come from?
That's a good question. Where is that money going to come from? I mean, well, we might have to increase permits and fee schedules so that we get a little bit more. Maybe there's an addendum to the fee schedule specifically for seismic retrofitting of older buildings. There's going to have to be a new source because we don't have the current source right now. So some kind of, we're going to have to look at it economically and make it fair.
Okay. And staying on the topic of the renters, what are you going to do to make sure that renters do not have to pay a disproportionate amount of the cost?
Well, that's already been discussed in City Council. I think that there's a strong concern that we are already living in a city that's the least affordable in the United States for renters. So the last thing we do need to do is make it even more unaffordable.
How are you going to stop that?
Well, I'm not going to say I'm going to stop it completely. I think that there has to be some cost sharing there. But I've heard that there's no intention of passing 100% of it to the renters.
Well, I didn't say 100%. I said a disproportionate amount of the cost.
You know, I don't know what the final, it'll all depend on where we're going to get those alternative sources outside of the property owners and the renters. So if we can get a good source from FEMA, or we can get a good source from working with the insurance council. I mean, there are a lot of property insurance companies that are covering these buildings in the city of Los Angeles. It is in their best interest to potentially give back a little bit of the profits for the seismic retrofit, maybe through low-interest loans, who knows. But it'll only save them millions in the long run in the event of an earthquake.
Okay. And moving on now, two related issues of citywide importance are street services and sidewalks. Mm-hmm. They are very important to the valley, too. Some areas do not have any of the latter. If
right.
elected, what are you going to do to improve streets?
Well, there are a couple of things I need to do. The gas tax is the primary way this city has a revenue source specifically for street maintenance. And knowing what I know about transportation, the gas taxes have been in a downward spiral probably for the last 20 years, mainly because people are driving more fuel-efficient vehicles and even electric vehicles that don't buy any gas at all, and yet they still use the road. So it's no longer what we would consider a user-based fee anymore. So,
but do the cities get part of that gas tax?
Yes. That's how we fund our streets. We get gas tax, we get Prop C dollars, which is basically we passed a transportation bill. So any corridor that's highly used by mass transit, those corridors get those dollars. Yeah, there are multiple sources. For a while there, during the recession, we got federal dollars. We got ARRA money, the recovery money. So we actually had a little bit of a cash infusion for a short period.
Okay, but going on now,
We have to work with the state. We've got to work with the state to look at the gas tax. And this is not something new. I mean, as an urban economist, this has been in discussion for a while because fuel-efficient vehicles hit the marketplace in the 80s. So we have to start looking at, instead of a tax that is charged on every gallon you put in your tank, it should be charged on the whole value. So it's gallon multiplied by the dollar per gallon.
So you'd want to increase the gas tax?
Well, yeah, we have to. I mean, there's just not enough money. If we are ever going to do that, that to me is a fair way of getting more money in for streets rather than a bond issue or a sales tax measure, which is typically regressive.
So you wouldn't suggest anything specifically at the city level?
No, there's things for sidewalks that have to be done. The city level, this is where our revenues come from. So the other thing we can do is work on technologies. Like, can we develop a better asphalt plant that might take some investment? What I've heard is anywhere from 10 to 20 million that we'd have to improve the asphalt plant, and therefore we'd have greater efficiencies. So we'd have more asphalt available, which is one of the things that holds us back from doing more streets.
Okay.
So there's that kind of thing. And then the sidewalks. You know, we have $27 million currently in the city budget for sidewalks, and almost none of it has been spent this fiscal year. We've also been sued because our sidewalks are in such poor shape, they're not ADA compliant. And the forces have won on that regard. So we have to now set aside monies to improve the sidewalks. They've been specifically targeting sidewalks outside of city buildings.
So is that how you'd spend the money first?
Far beyond that. So my proposal is the 50-50 plan, where the property owner and the city basically pay for each 50% of the cost of the sidewalk. But
hasn't that been proposed before?
I'm sorry?
Hasn't that been proposed before?
It's actually been done before. They're doing it in certain areas. Certain districts have already adopted it.
So do you have a unique approach to that, or would you just keep the ones
there? The approach that I use is, first, let's create a database of cement or permeable paver vendors. And I do think that we have to start looking at permeable pavers over cement because we have to get more water into our aquifer. So we look at that, and we get this list of vendors. Say I'm the property owner. I look at the list of vendors on the website. I choose one. I get a bid. I take a photo. I subscribe for a no-fee permit. And then I get the work done. An inspector comes. He looks at it. He says it's okay. I submit my receipt. I get 50% back within 4 days.
How is that different than the existing 50-50 plan?
Each one is being handled differently. There is no formal 50-50 plan that's citywide right now. I'm thinking that they want city employees to do the work. And what I'm trying to do is get away from that because of the cost of a city employee is so expensive. The money that we have, the $27 million, won't go very far.
Okay.
It'll go far further if we can use private contractors.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that, Ms. Irani, and thank you very much for calling into the Hot Seat today. It was a pleasure. The Hot Seat After Hour starts right now. You can email the Hot Seat inbox at thehotseatwithmaxschwartz@gmail.com, or you can tweet me at MaxSchwartzTV. You can subscribe to the Hot Seat newsletter by clicking on the link on our page. Go to edinburghradio.org/podcast and click on the link underneath the Hot Seat's description and enter your email address. Thank you for listening. I hope you will join me next time.